Mainline Protestant churches have softened and even rejected the Bible, the gospel of salvation, and biblical sexual morality. Even in evangelical churches, only about 10% of members have a truly biblical worldview. Satan desires to do to the Bible-believing evangelical churches what he did to the mainline churches, and he's made progress. Your financial support now is critical to AFA's efforts to defend and strengthen the church. Go online at afa.net/equipchurches.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Thursday, July the 9th, 2026. And in studio today is Wesley Wildman. Good morning, Wesley.
Good morning.
Good morning, Fred Jackson.
Howdy to you.
And Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
Lack of enthusiasm there, Chris. You're usually chipper.
Yeah, I was just seeing if anybody noticed.
You're usually high energy.
I know. I was literally in the car, and I was like, one day I'm just going to go, hey. And just see if anybody picks up on it.
A subdued Chris Woodward. Yeah.
For long, I can see his sheet of papers over there. He's ready.
I've had my two pots of coffee. I'm ready to go.
Those who don't know, Chris is our newsman. You should know if you listen. And Steve Jordahl is our newsman next hour.
Mm-hmm. And they come well prepared.
So they have the list of stories we're going to discuss on the program today, trying to keep you up to speed on current events. Fred, we have a news service that you head up and that people need to be aware of if they're not already. Tell us about it.
Yeah, you know, I was at a conference recently, and it was at the Cove, a bunch of Christian folks, and they said, you know, we'd really like to get our news from a Christian perspective. I said, you would? Let me tell you about a news service from a Christian perspective. Yeah. And we got talking about American Family News. And AFN.net online, you hear our newscasts here on the radio, but AFN.net, the stories that you hear on radio, we publish. We have a team that publishes it for the website. Keep it up to date, actually 7 days a week. We have an editor that keeps it up to date on the weekend. Mm-hmm. So you can go there 24 hours a day. By the way, we have a daily email Monday through Friday. You can go to the website, go up to the right-hand side, just put your email address in there. We will send you one email a day, Monday through Friday, with the summary of the big stories of the day done by our team of reporters, Christian perspective of what's going on in our world right now.
Okay, so go to what website?
AFN.net, AFN.net.
And I would like to add, now I'm always behind on technology, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But some of our listeners are going to go, well, duh, but there is a podcast thing out there.
Okay. What kind of podcast thing is there?
So there's this thing where you can upload audio on your phone, by the way. I'm fairly not new to that, as in like in the last couple, maybe the last 2 years, I've gotten into it pretty good. Long story short, this has been going on for a while, and AFN has a 4.5-minute news summary of the day. So the news that you hear at the top of the hour, the four and a half minute, is now has been summarizing the podcast. I have it on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is when I get in my vehicle, my CarPlay goes straight to my phone goes straight to my CarPlay, and it pulls up AFN, and I get the 4.5-minute summary driving into work at my convenience, and they update that 4 times a day.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
we actually we've started another podcast in addition to that one. Parrish Alford and I, near the end of a work week, we get together and record what we're calling the Week in Review podcast, where for about 20 to 30 minutes we discuss the big stories we've had in the past week. And we took a little bit of a break due to vacation scheduling or whatnot, but Lord willing, we will have one of those starting tomorrow.
Would that be at the same location I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. Okay. AFN.net, yes.
So you got 1 hour radio programs, you got 1 hour podcast, but if you're looking for a 4.5-minute summary of the day news, that's where you want to go get it.
In audio form.
In audio form, yep.
Wow, you don't even have to read.
Yeah.
Just dumb it down.
That is the great thing about AFN, though. We do news for radio and print. So if you'd like to be told what's going down, radio is your friend. If you still like to read the news, we can do that for you
as
well.
That would be a good motto for our news service, American Family Radio.
Dumb it down.
What's going down.
Yeah. Oh, what's going down. Okay.
Yeah, learn what's going down.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So, Chris, by the way, Dr. Alex McFarlane will be with us at the bottom of the hour. So we look forward to what Alex has to say and share. What's your first story, Eric?
All right. This is a story we broke last night and updated our radio and print coverage on. Democrat Senate candidate Graham Plattner in Maine suspended his campaign last night after the Politico story claiming that he sexually assaulted a former girlfriend. That Politico story, of course, was one of several articles in recent weeks that claimed he was mean or abusive to women and former lovers, girlfriends, what have you. And last night, he, in a video message that lasted about 11 minutes, he finally announced that he was suspending his campaign, but he did stress that his suspension is not an admission of guilt. He's long claimed that none of these reports about him are true, and he's actually blaming some sort of establishment for the reason why he's having to suspend his campaign. Clip one.
We live in a political system that is not built for normal people. It is a system that is built structurally to make sure that movements like ours cannot flourish. We believe that for the movement to continue, it can't be made. And for that reason, we are suspending campaign operations.
He's playing the they're out to get me card.
Mm-hmm. I'm a victim.
I'm a victim. Mm. The problem with that is that he was in a neck and neck race, okay? He might have been able to win there. We're talking about the Senate race in Maine. Susan Collins is the longtime Republican senator from Maine, and that's who he was going up against. But the reason I say I don't buy the, you know, establishment is taking me down part is because these far lefties have been winning in races in New York and Colorado and Seattle and other places. So I don't think that that hurts him. If that's what he's going to claim. What did he say?
He said the system is not set up to have someone like him flourish.
Okay.
But he also signed up to run.
Yeah, he signed up to run. What happened, for those who don't know, I know most of you are intimately following the Maine Senate race.
That's right.
That's probably one of your top two.
Hey, that's why they're listening to us.
Today's
help
issues,
them out.
Yes, people are... Our listeners are neck deep into the Maine Senate race. Mm-hmm. What happened there, this fella here, his name is Graham Plattner. He just sort of came out of nowhere to challenge Collins, as I said, a Republican. And, of course, Maine is a liberal state. It's a blue state. Mm-hmm. But Collins is a Republican. So she's been able to... Maine hasn't always been blue. It's been purple. Some Democrats, some Republicans. Anyway, so this fella here, what happened was a story broke in the last 3 or 4 days, or maybe longer, where he was accused by a former girlfriend, who herself is a Democrat liberal, but she accused him basically of sexual assault, right? In years gone by. I don't know how far back this goes. And he's saying that the timing of this and the accusation, which he says is not true, is designed to take him out of the race. And I don't know, he blamed the establishment. And I think he's talking about the Democrat establishment, right?
about the Democrat establishment. But even before that accusation, it goes back several weeks. There was another woman who claimed that she was sexually abused, a former girlfriend.
You had two of them.
New York Times wrote...
First one was a Republican.
Yeah.
Yeah.
New York Times did that story, but that was dismissed because she had Republican Party background. But there's also been other things. It was the Nazi tattoo. It was him... attacking veterans, military veterans, even though he himself is one. et cetera, et cetera. I think there was a problem with vetting.
Yes.
I think there was a problem with vetting. The two people who vetted this guy for the Democratic Party were interviewed in recent days as to what questions they asked about him before they recommended him. We're going to play a little bit of that interview with these two folks.
I'm looking forward to that.
Cut number 12.
How did you go about vetting him? And why did you?
We paid a nice firm a whole chunk of money and got some stuff back. Some of what you've seen on the news we got back. Other stuff we didn't.
Did the vetting process turn up the tattoo that became so controversial?
No.
The Reddit posts, did that turn up in the vetting process?
The firm sent us a thing and it had some of the posts,
yeah,
but it didn't have all of them. I said none of this will or should stop him from becoming a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
The guy got something going on in his throat there or something. That fellow there, Dan. Who was that? We don't know who that was. He was a guy who was responsible for vetting.
Sounds kind of goofy.
Yeah. And she laughed.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the
his partner. I guess they already got paid.
Yeah.
But, anyway, so he's gone. He's out. So what does this mean for the Senate race there?
Well, they're now going to have a convention, the Democratic Party. They're going to have a convention in a few weeks. About 600 people will be invited to pick another option.
Because they've still got time.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're talking about a November election day.
Yeah. By the end of this month, they're going to have a convention.
Well, there's a date in this discussion, July the 13th. Was that the date?
Yeah, he had to make his decision.
Okay, I guess.
Yeah, and he did
and
that.
And why this matters to the rest of America, it really is because it could change the balance of power in the United States Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Should Collins, the Republican, lose to a Democrat in Maine, you know, that would be one more that the Democrats pick up. It's 53 Republicans, 47 Democrats right now, right? Mm-hmm. I guess technically Bernie Sanders is an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats, as they mm-hmm. say. Mm-hmm. So for all practical purposes, it's 53 to 47. So, of course, there are other Senate campaigns going all across America. You've got Georgia. You've got, I think, Alaska.
Texas.
These are some that come to mind. Texas. I think a third of the Senate is up every 2 years.
Yep.
A third of the Senate. Because a United States senator, once elected, serves a six-year term. So even more than a president who serves 4 years. So this matters to the country who's elected in Senate races. And so that's why the national attention has been on this controversy in Maine. But the fella who was tied with Collins is out.
Yeah.
Graham Plattner.
I can play some more audio from him.
I don't care to hear
it. Want. Would you like to hear John Fetterman's opinion on this issue?
No, but I've got a question.
Okay.
Okay.
Has someone not told Plattner that his mustache is uneven? Have you seen this?
If mine is mine?
Okay. No,
sometimes
you're good.
I check on mine every once in a while. I'm not OCD, but I noticed that. So it's uneven.
It's got a slight tilt to the left.
And well, that explains it.
Exactly. And then I go like this to see if it's me or him. Anyway, right. It's distracting.
Yeah.
That didn't come up in the vetting process either.
So even his mustache tilts to the left.
I knew it.
And listen, if that's something we could show on radio, we would. Because other than that, I think I'm with Dad. I think we've got all the audio we want from Platinum.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's
have a good life.
Let's definitely play this piece of audio from John Fetterman.
He's a senator from Pennsylvania.
Democrat senator. Yeah. He would be somebody that theoretically Graham Plattner would have to deal with in Washington, D.C. And let's just say Fetterman is not sad to see Plattner go. Clip 4.
I'd say that the trash took itself out. Finally, people in Maine have a chance to really vote on someone that's not a total piece of trash.
Tell us how you really feel.
That's John Fetterman, the Democrat senator from Pennsylvania, otherwise known as Hoodie John.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the one that likes to wear the hoodie to work.
And like the big basketball shorts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a big guy. He's probably like 3 feet taller than me.
Yeah, he's a big fella. But anyway, so he's glad that Plattner's gone up there in Maine.
Yeah, so. And yeah, this may very well be the most important. I know people always say this is the most important election of our lifetime. But for a president, this may be the most important midterm election of any president, because it looks like if you go with the polls, Democrats are going to win the House, which means Republicans really want to keep the Senate, because that's going to obviously impact judicial nominees. But if Democrats were to get control of, let's say, the House and the Senate, they will have no problem impeaching President Trump.
You don't think they'll have problems?
Well, if it's a divided Congress. If it's a divided Congress.
I could be wrong here. I think that the Democrats will not waste their time going after an impeachment of President Trump, given the fact that he would only have 2 years left and be considered a lame duck president. So
and backfire possibly. Yeah, get backfire. The Republicans back involved, and
because I think part of the reason President Trump won 2 years ago was because the
attacks on him.
The attacks on him that a lot of Americans viewed him as unfair, and including the impeachment. And so I just don't. I could be wrong. You know, the TDS. You know, that's pretty strong.
Yeah, the impeachment. They raided.
The prosecutions.
Prosecution. Yeah. That. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. What's your next story, Chris?
Well, from political attacks to military attacks, the U.S. has responded to Iran's attacks on commercial ships in the Strait of Hormuz with more U.S.-led attacks on Iranian infrastructure near the Strait and in other parts of Iran. President Trump and members of the administration said yesterday that the ceasefire is over. But the president is also on record as saying things like, this doesn't mean we're back to war. He still wants some sort of deal worked out. Clip 5.
It's sort of crazy, to be honest with you. It's sort of crazy. They're a little bit out of control, but they want to make a deal. Badly.
I'm not hearing that.
It was a little incoherent at first.
He needs to take a few days
no,
off.
No, when I say I'm not hearing that, I'm la, 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 la,
oh, okay,
la.
Okay.
You mean you've heard that before?
Yeah. Well, I just said yesterday.
Yeah.
If he says this tomorrow, I'm not.
I know.
I'd rather play the clip from yesterday. It was better.
I do not have that.
Yesterday's clip was, I'm done with them. They're scum.
And they're liars.
And I can't trust them.
Yeah. Yep.
And they agree to one thing, then they come out publicly. They agree to one thing with us, Iranians.
And as far as he's concerned, he's done with them.
Yeah, that's what he said yesterday. So, you have yesterday?
Well,
okay. Okay. This is yesterday. Okay, this is yesterday. This is President Trump yesterday. What we just heard
with us
was
support.
After that. Go ahead.
Is the ceasefire over? Is the ceasefire done? Is the MOU dead?
It's a very interesting question. To me, I think it's over. I don't want to deal with them anymore. They're scum. You know what scum is? They're scum. They're sick people. They're led by sick people. And they're vicious, violent people. And if they had a nuclear weapon, they'd use it. As far as I'm concerned, it's over. I'll speak to our negotiators. They want to negotiate. They're good people. Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner. But they have to come back to me. As far as I'm concerned, it's just a waste of time dealing with them. They're liars. We make a deal. And if I make a deal with him, we have a deal. And he goes out, he talks. We make a deal. Everyone's agreed. No nuclear weapon. We make a deal. They go outside, talk to the press. They say, we never even talked about it. There's something wrong with them. They're cuckoo. As far as I'm concerned, it's over.
Okay.
Yay.
That was Trump yesterday saying what I think a majority of Americans have been knowing for about a month or longer. Okay, and then he comes back today. I don't know if he just woke up, whatever, and says this.
Play. Clip 5.
It's sort of crazy, to be honest with you. It's sort of crazy. They're a little bit out of control, but they want to make a deal. Badly.
That sounds like the Big Mac and Diet Coke from the McDonald's and Ankara turkey didn't keep him awake, and he needs to take a nap.
He sounds tired. He probably should have skipped that press conference right
That's
there.
Right.
But that was a short, brief statement. But But that contradicts, at least in my mind, what he said yesterday. Waste of time. And then he comes back and says they want to make a deal desperately, badly or whatever. Anyway.
They don't want to make a deal.
What do you think about all this, Fred?
They do not want to make a deal.
They being the Iranians?
The Iranians. They do not want to make a deal.
The regime.
Yes.
They don't. Why do you think President Trump said that after he said they're cuckoo and I don't trust them and waste of time and all that?
Well, I think he's still trying to come up with an exit plan.
There you go. That's fair.
They can celebrate something. What I'm hearing down the road a week or so from now, because I think the Republicans have to wrap this up, the White House has to wrap this up very soon, is that they do not have a nuclear weapon. That was our big goal. They don't have a nuclear weapon. We're going to go home. Now, but the problem I think he's going to run into, the Iranians found something out. They found out if they control the Strait of Hormuz, they can basically crow about it and say, we won. Because if they control that strait, they control 20% of the oil resources in the world. And they still have that power right now. And the only way to stop them would be for the United States to keep a fairly large contingent in that area of the world. And I don't think the president wants to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, we the United States, did, as you said, Chris, attack Iran militarily for the second or third night in a row.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Right. So I don't know what all we took out. I don't know if that's been, has the briefing been held on that?
Yeah, for the first time, we took out some bridges last night.
Okay.
Including, apparently, a bridge that was going to be used today to carry the body of Khomeini to his final resting
place. And that delivers on a threat that a promise he's made for weeks, really, that he's going to start doing this kind of stuff if they don't play ball.
How long has that guy been dead?
March?
They took him out right off the bat.
Yeah.
Is this normal to go March, April, May, June, 4 months before you have a
burial?
I'm not sure of the practice, but probably it had something to do with the war going on.
Yeah. Because Operation Epic Fury began February 28th, and like Fred said, he was killed early on.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens today and tomorrow. But do you think people are paying attention to this, Wesley, anymore?
Oh,
kind of, maybe, a little bit?
Very, very little.
Talking about the Iranian conflict.
Very little.
What would,
I would say very little.
Okay. So one other question on this. Do you think, Fred, that the attacks that we're carrying out militarily are meant to force Iran to do what?
Well, that's the thing. I think the Iranians feel they're in the driver's seat here. They know we have an election coming. They know that Trump has to wrap this up for the sake of the election, if nothing else.
Okay, so the longer they can draw it out. But, I mean, if you start taking out bridges and infrastructure and roads and, you know, oil refineries, I don't know what all they have in mind, the United States, but it could be severely punishing to the to Iran and the people of Iran. So, of course, the people of Iran, I put that in quotations, I'm talking about the average person over there who have nothing to do with the
regime,
you know, they're going to be caught in the crossfires here, crosshair, so to speak, because they are going to suffer economically and other ways.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah. But that's just how it is. Yeah.
Yes, but could you make a case, though, that they are already suffering in the same way?
Yes, you could. You could. And the Iranian regime has already killed, some reports, 30 to 40,000.
That's right.
Of these average Iranian people who they viewed as trying to revolt against the regime. Mm-hmm. So, all right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We shall return momentarily with more of with Alex McFarland coming up in just a minute.
This year, America celebrates its 250th birthday. 2.5 centuries of courage, innovation, faith, and freedom. But what will the next 250 years hold? The next generation could hold the next Billy Graham, the next Rosa Parks, the next Ronald Reagan, the next child whose life will impact generations. But first, they must be given the chance to live. Every day, preborn network clinics help mothers facing unexpected pregnancies discover hope through a free ultrasound. When a mother sees her baby and hears that tiny heartbeat, her baby is twice as likely to be given the gift of life. What story will God write through America's next generation? In honor of America's 250th anniversary, we're asking friends to consider a special gift of $250. Your gift can help provide nearly 9 life-saving ultrasounds. Dial hashtag 250 and say the keyword baby. That's hashtag 250 baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Every gift is tax deductible.
Hello, everyone. Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We are going to Italy in March of 2027. We're also going to Greece in March of 2027. And we're doing those tours back to back if you want to do both of them. In Italy, we'll be going to Venice, ride the gondola, and see all the sights there, and we'll go to Pisa and walk on the Leaning Tower of. If you fall off, we're not responsible. Also, we're going to Rome and see the Sistine Chapel and the Colosseum and all the catacombs. We'll see all the sights of Rome. And in Greece, it's the Footsteps of Paul trip, so the places where Paul went in the Bible mentioned in Greece. If you want information on any of these tours, go to tours.afa.net, tours.afa.net, tours.afa.net.
The Lord isn't really being slow about His promise, as some people think. No, He is being patient for your sake. He does not want anyone to be destroyed, but wants everyone to repent. 2 Peter 3:9.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim with Wesley, Fred, and Chris. And now Alex McFarland joins us, Dr. Alex McFarland. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, so are you through with your youth summer camps across the country yet?
No, we still got a few more to go. Getting ready to head up to the Cove next week, though, the Billy Graham Center.
Right.
And so that's maybe summer camp for the grown-ups.
Yeah, it's a little bit more luxurious, even though it's still rustic, but they feed you right at the Cove, I'll tell you that. It's a beautiful setting, and you're not roughing it, okay?
Yeah, even though it's in the,
all right, so how many, just real quickly, want to get an update, because for those who don't know, Alex has Christian patriotic summer camps that around the country that he hosts for middle school and high school students, and he's been doing this for how many years now?
Since 1998.
1998. How many do you host? How many did you host this year?
This year we had a total of 8 camps.
Okay.
And
are the ones you have coming up, the ones you have left, where are they and are they full?
Okay, they actually are full. And Tim, thank you so much for helping promote this. But
yeah,
July 20 through 25, we're in Panama City Beach, Florida, Laguna Beach Christian Retreat. August 2 through 7, we're in Brevard, North Carolina. That's the western part of North Carolina, Ridgehaven Conference Center. And then August 16 through 21, we're in Stevens, Pennsylvania, Refreshing Mountain Retreat Center. And but we've been in Montana, Iowa, Georgia, Colorado. We were 2 weeks ago in eastern North Carolina at a place called The Refuge. We've had several hundred kids pray to accept Christ already this summer.
Amen.
And, you know, so many of the youth that come to our camps have come two and three and four summers. And I mean, we give the gospel, it's, you know, come to Christ, but then we do biblical worldview. And Tim, I was just in Abilene, Texas Monday night at a big rally, and I met a young man named Ty, now in his late 20s, married, and he's a full-time youth pastor. And he came up, he said, "You don't remember me, but when I was a teenager, I was in your camp, and at your camp, I came to the Lord, and then at another camp, I surrendered to the ministry, and I give God the glory. We've been at this long enough to
Amen.
See not only thousands of young people make a decision for Christ, but many called into ministry, and we just encourage the kids, number one, get saved, but then find a Christian spouse, build a Christian family."
Yeah. The Panama City Beach Camp, is that on the beach?
I have to tell you, I've not been there yet. This is the first year we've rented this facility, so
you didn't
I
go check
it
out?
But I don't know.
So who checked it out for you?
We got people.
Okay. I knew that. Alex has people. It's called the Biblical Worldview Mafia. That's what they're, what they're known as.
The Christian Taliban.
The Christian, I just wondered about that because I think if you had it on the beach, it would be too distracting unless you had the students turn away from the beach as they listen to the instructor. That's what I'm saying. I would not advise the beach to be behind the speaker in view. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Alex, one question I have for you that I know you get often. There are a lot of people listening right now who have kids or grandkids, and they're getting ready for college, okay? They're in their junior year in high school or senior year coming up, and they're looking forward. You know, college is not for everybody. In today's world, you know, there's a lot of opportunity in different trades, that you go to trade school, for example. You don't have to go to get a four-year degree like used to be. You know, people used to say, "Do you have your college degree?" And you had a better chance of getting a good job, is what I'm saying. That's no longer necessarily true. But I do want to ask you this. We hear the horror stories of Christian families who send their young people off to college, and then they are subject to secular, you know, anti-Christian indoctrination. Now, that's not everywhere all day at public universities, but at the same time, it is out there, especially in different disciplines, you know, more prevalent in different disciplines that people would study or different, you know. But what do you advise when parents or and grandparents, if they're involved, are looking at colleges for their young person in terms of where to go, that kind of thing? Do you answer those kind of questions?
Yeah, we do, because it's been kind of a debacle for so many years that American education, even in professed Christian colleges or historically Christian colleges, there's just, you know, anti-God, anti-American, anti-biblical teaching, certainly in the denominational schools.
So just because a school has a Christian name on it doesn't mean that it's a Christian school anymore.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. And so I wrote this book called Stand Strong in College. It's based on, in fact, when I, in the late 90s, I was youth pastor, and I began to do a lot of apologetics worldview conferences in Greensboro, North Carolina, and it ultimately would branch out across the country. But I was doing this seminar called What You'll Hear Your Freshman Year, Preparing for the Ways That College Will Challenge Your Faith. And Tyndale Publishers, well, it was really that book and that seminar that got me in the awareness of James Dobson. And we had done a lot of events with people like Josh McDowell, and Dr. Dobson called me on the phone one day and he said, "Hey, I want you to come to Colorado." Here's exactly what James Dobson said. He said, "I want you to bring your circus under my tent." And that was really, even to this day, my you know, working for American Family, I would say what God did in our life 25 years ago that brought me into the world of James Dobson was what prepared me for my work with AFR, really. But here's the thing. I was really concerned. So many young people raised in church, Christian families, but they'd go away to the university and become an agnostic, you know? So I wrote this book.
That's heartbreaking. Think about it. I heard a similar story. I've heard other stories, but a couple I knew sent their Christian young person off to college, and this person was a leader in their church youth group, strong, and then went off to college, and like within a year, he's been subjected to these professors that are attacking his faith, and he comes home questioning.
Yeah,
you know, and the parents are going, "Whoa, hold on, just a minute. What happened here?" You know,
yeah.
Go ahead.
I'll never forget. I was in the lobby of a church in a city called High Point, North Carolina, and this couple had come to hear me speak, and this dad, you know, had tears in his eyes, and he said, "I paid NC State University $100,000 to disconvert my son," meaning his son. It's a true story. I mean, his son had been a Christian but became an agnostic. And now, so there's a couple of things I think we need to say. Number one, in our presentation of the gospel, I think we have to be clear with people of all ages. When you become a Christian, you are committing to be a disciple. It's not just recite a prayer and then go on my merry way, and decades from now I'll die and go to heaven. If you accept Jesus, you are becoming a disciple. And that means a lifelong follower, regardless of the circumstances. And so I really think, and Bert and I talk about this a lot on Exploring the Word, that in American soteriology or the presentation of the gospel, I think we need to be really clear with people that it's not, Jesus does not accessorize our life. He's not one more detail in our busy life. No, he is the Lord of our life. And that means that we're to always be growing and following, and we're a disciple. The other thing moms and dads need to know is that alma mater where you went to college 30 years ago, in the 21st century, it is probably a vastly different environment than you remember. And I think from elementary up, we have to teach young people to be able to defend their faith. Tim, I love education. I live to learn. I really do. But you got to understand so much that's out there, even in traditionally religious schools, is not truth and fact, but it's ideology.
Wesley.
Hey, Alex, this is Wesley here. What's the number one attack for college students on their Christian faith?
Probably
Budweiser.
Yeah,
that's well.
That is
alcohol.
Yeah,
that's true. Different. That's different from the classroom. Right. Partying. Well, when you get away from mom and dad.
That's for sure. I know that's a joke, but I'm more so talking like if you're sitting. So if you're at the cafeteria,
in the classroom, you're talking about
Classroom, cafeteria, on campus.
Right.
What's the biggest attack or challenge? I guess apologetically to the Christian faith.
Right.
Well, the golden calf of our times is diversity, equity, multiculturalism. And so it's going to be the LGBTQ trans ideology is just enforced on people.
Also the Black Lives Matter type thinking.
Critical theory that America is structurally flawed, that America is bad. So it's going to be, you know, LGBT, it's going to be anti-Americanism, and just unending messaging against anything traditional values.
Let me ask you this question. So the question is, and Fred and Chris, you guys feel free to jump in. What do you say to the argument, well, listen, if a Christian young person is grounded in their faith, there's nothing wrong with going off to a college where they may be challenged or ask questions or have to defend their faith. You can't shelter people forever from the real world. How would you respond to that?
Well, yeah, when a person is equipped, like in the spirit of 1 Peter 3:15, you know, set apart Christ as Lord in your heart, be ready to give an answer. Jude verse 3, earnestly contend for the faith. When a person of any age has been discipled and they have invested in their worldview, I don't worry about them sitting under atheist PhDs. And, you know, I myself have been to 150 colleges to speak or debate. I mean, I wouldn't mind a young person going to Berkeley, if they're well-equipped. The thing is, though, that, and I'm not trying to be overly critical of the church. I love the church, but many a Sunday school, youth group, discipleship program has been, you know, pizza, paintball, and Pepsi. Mm-hmm. And not so much equipping. And then, I mean, just to give a child a copy of my book on graduation Sunday, that's not enough equipping. I think, and my friend Ken Ham says this, from childhood up, we need to win hearts and equip minds so that even though if a kid is sitting under pagan professors, they're not going to be deconstructed.
Alex, Proverbs 22:6 comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Train up a child in the way they should go. And you kind of hit on it a few moments ago. The kids aren't prepared.
Yeah.
If they're going to go to a secular university, and as you say, even some colleges that have Christianity on the banner, they're not ready for it because they haven't been trained.
Right.
Starting at a very early age. And that's where I think many times church youth groups, they should be there doing that, but they're not doing that.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing, and there's a myriad of content that will supplement what I'm about to say, but we have to ever remind the church of the authority of God's word. On any issue, I know where I stand because I know where the Bible stands. Now, I've got a 32-hour semester-long course I teach on why we know that the Bible is the infallible Word of God. But from toddlerhood up, we need to tell people that if you're a Christian, the Bible is our authority on all things about life and eternity. And I would say, Tim, you know, churches that, and again, I love the church. I'm not bashing the church. But look, on homosexuality, gender, marriage, morals, Islam, economics, citizenship, patriotism, if the Bible were the authority that it should be in all of our lives, it would be a vastly different America.
Yeah, Chris, go ahead.
Yes, yeah, so it's very timely that we're having this discussion because I have two children, both girls. One is going into 11th grade, the other's going into 8th grade. My 11th grader is planning on going to college. She's got her mind settled on one, and things like this, they scare me to death. I know as Christians we shouldn't be fearful.
What scares you to death?
The fact that they're going to be out into the world away from mom and dad.
I got you.
And so I think you've already answered this question, Alex, but to help people like me and others out there, just to hear it in plain, simple terms. What should we parents be doing with a child just about to go to college? Like hearing your discussion today, your thoughts, your plans, what should we be doing after this interview is over?
Great question. Well, I think mom and dad need to role model before their children. And I know you have, and many others have as well. But I want to call on the men, the husbands and fathers, to be the priest of the home. And your children need to see that you pray with your wife and that you have, you know, read Open Windows or Our Daily Bread, or you have daily devotions, and then that you're in church. Because like Exodus 13, this is so beautiful. It says, when it comes to pass that your son will ask you, why do we do these things? Then you will say, when Pharaoh would hardly let us go, God with a strong hand delivered us. And the implication of Exodus 13 is that your child ultimately comes to this moment where they say, Dad, how do I have what you've got? I can see your relationship with the Lord is preeminent. How do I have that too? So we role model it before our kids, but then we always invest. Martin Luther said this, that you're investing in your children to learn to be a disciple. And apologetics camp is part of that. Going to a good church is part of that. And so I've got to say this, everything about our parenting has to be, whether it's how we live in the home, where we are on Sunday morning, where we go to church, you know, going on vacation, but purposeful spiritual heritage tour, things like that. Everything about life for the disciple and the family is pointed towards our walk and our growth in Jesus.
One other thing, just a personal experience, and this is, this would have been the mid-80s at Mississippi State University, which is where I went to school. And I had to go to a class called A&P, that's Anatomy and Physiology. You heard of this?
Yeah. Sure.
Well, I didn't know what it was. So.
At the time, right?
Huh?
You mean at the time?
I didn't fare well. I just didn't, huh? It's a study of every bone and every muscle in the body. And I don't know how I got in. I think my counselor just said,
there's a lot of that going on.
I'm going to put this guy in here and tell him he needs this class. And then he laughed as I walked out down the hall. I think that's what happened. Anyway, some reason I was in that class, and the professor, early on, began to make fun of people who believed in biblical creation openly. Mm-hmm. In the class, and it was like, that was the first time I'd been subjected to, she didn't have a chance to punish me for my grades because I did that by myself. I didn't need her. She didn't need to punish me. I punished myself. But the point was, it was an eye-opening moment when I was going, wait a minute, you're making fun of God. Mm-hmm. You're making fun of the Bible.
At a school in the Bible Belt.
At a school in the Bible. This would have been, this wasn't common. It was in a class where you had to talk about where did humans come from. So it was a quote science class. You know what I'm saying? But that was I just remember that even to today. That was the first time I experienced somebody who was hostile to the biblical beliefs that I'd been taught. Yeah.
I got a funny story. The opposite of that. So I was in middle school. In science class, we got the book out. First page is this. Second, third page, it's got the monkeys. And my science teacher in public school said, yeah, we're not going to cover that.
Yeah.
He said,
we're going to skip this.
We're not going to cover that. I had a similar situation in ninth grade.
Well, you were in the Bible Belt.
Yes. So in my ninth grade biology class, my teacher was a football coach. And he coached other things. But one day, he said, I have to tell you something. And he got up, and he shut the door, and he sat back down and said, the state of Mississippi requires me to tell you that some people think we came from monkeys. That's the end of today's discussion. And he got up and opened the door, and then, like, we had study hall for the rest of the period.
You know what? This brings a question. What I always wondered about evolution, Darwinian evolution, as it's called, that's based on Charles Darwin. So, Alex, this is a whole nother topic, but still, it's a question I've always had. These people argue that that animals evolved, right?
Right.
And the humans evolved,
right?
And I always thought, well, how did it all start? Because if you have, let's say, alligators, for example, You have male and female, and without male and female, you can't procreate. You can't have more exactly. baby alligators, okay? So are you telling me that the male and the female, wherever they came from, evolved at the same time, at the same place on planet Earth?
And wasn't it fortunate that they happened to find each other?
They happened to find each other. And all these species did this mm-hmm. all over the globe. Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable. Okay, you can't even. So when they make fun, these people who promote Darwinian or monkey evolution, monkeys became people.
Mm-hmm. It's a fairy tale for grown-ups.
Yeah, I grant you that the biblical story of creation is something that's sometimes hard to comprehend itself mm-hmm. or explain. But I would say this for people who question that, we are talking about God here. Mm-hmm. You know, so if God is supernatural and all powerful and omnipotent and all those things, he can do anything he wants. Exactly. Now, whether you believe in God or not, that's yeah. your decision. But I'm just telling you, if you do believe in God, nothing is impossible. Okay. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it.
God bless you all.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.